so much for teams led by a dominant post player that play in a small market not winning NBA titles, huh? I guess we got to get rid of that narrative, don't we? Congratulations to the Milwaukee Bucks coming back from being down 2-0 to win 4 straight, to win their first NBA championship in 50 years. 50 years as Giannis, the Greek freak, drops 50-plus in a closeout game, wraps up finals MVP as the Bucks are your world champions. Good morning. Welcome to RP3 and Company. I am your host, Raymond Parch III, joined here in the First South Farm Credit Studios by the producer, Nick Diaz. We got a tremendous show lined up for you today. We're going to talk lots of college football. Connor O'Gara from Saturday Down South joins us. He'll be joining us from SEC Media Days, giving us the latest updates there. Ron Higgins will join us as well in the third hour, 8 o'clock hour. Give us his thoughts on what Ed O, Derek Stingley Jr., and Austin Deculus had to say from SEC Media Days. Then we'll talk recruiting, hopefully with Jarrett Rozier, coming up at 7:30. Latest commitments with the Raging Cajuns. They are hitting the Lone Star State hard. They got yet another 3-star prospect out of Texas. We'll talk about that as well as the latest recruiting with involving LSU, if we can get Jarrett on the line. My man was in Milwaukee last night. He drove up, met up, so he flew to Chicago on the fly. Met up with some friends. They drove from Chicago to Milwaukee. He watched the Bucks game in a bar near the arena, rocking a Bucks jersey. So we're tentatively scheduled to have Jarrett Rozier on the program at 7:30. Let's just put that out there. Nick, make sure to take a note. It's going to be tentative with our man, Jarrett Rozier. Of course, we'll take your phone calls. Hotline's always open, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. But we'll start off today's show talking NBA Finals. Wow. That's how you close out a game. No, and I'm not talking about how ugly the game was in the first quarter, because this was not a good-looking game in the first quarter and parts of the second. Just wasn't. Some bad basketball we saw early on in last night's game 6. Right? Teams were just jacking up shots. No one was really executing very well. There were turnovers. It was sloppy basketball. Let's make no bones about it. The start of this game was sloppy. If you're the type that has not, you know, has fallen out of love with watching the NBA because of the style of play, shout out to my guy, Zach Miller, then last night's game doesn't necessarily, especially early on, did not exactly reinvigorate you to watch the association. But then came the second quarter, and the Bucks just took over. And Giannis took over. I'll give you the rundown here on Giannis. Most Improved Player Award, 2-time league MVP, Defensive Player of the Year, multiple All-Star, and multiple All-NBA selection. He's now also an NBA Finals MVP and a world champion. Oh, by the way, he's 26. 26 years old. That's it. That's it. For a guy who was a late bloomer, he's just now entering his prime. We're going to have another 5 to 7 quality, high-level, high-caliber years from the Greek Freak. Let that wash over you for a minute. And we'll get to where he stands right now in basketball. Is he the best player on the face of the planet? LeBron's on the backside of his career. Kevin Durant's still in that conversation. You could argue maybe Steph Curry's still in that conversation. Luka is coming. But this is what you do in a closeout game. And Giannis started playing well, but it was all the second half. Phoenix once again had a lead in the first half of the NBA Finals game and couldn't hold on to it. Couldn't hold on to it. Milwaukee leads after the first. The second, you think Phoenix is simply taking over the game. They outscored Milwaukee 31-13. They held the Bucks at home in the land of fear of the deer to only 13 points. And you're like, uh-oh. You're like, uh-oh. It's a tight game, but Phoenix has the lead. And then Milwaukee just wakes up. They just woke up in the second half. And Giannis just took over. And you watched it on television, and you saw the crowd just go berserk in Milwaukee. And despite having a second quarter to forget for the Bucks, because they were awful in the second quarter. Once again, it's the NBA Finals. You're only scoring 13 points. Not great. The energy of the home crowd, whatever it might have been, they just took over. By the way, coming out wearing the all-black unis, I love the bravado there from the Bucks. I saw that earlier before leading up to the game, and the Bucks actually tweeted out a photo of it. Of, hey, here's our unis for tonight, the all-black unis. Ooh. People start commenting. They're wearing those for a funeral. They backed it up. They looked bad in an entire quarter of play at home, and they still backed it up and took over. Giannis drops 50. 50 in a closeout game. 14 rebounds, 10 of them were defensively. He's such a good defensive player. And guess what? 17 of 19 from the free throw line. The big fella made his free throws. Only shot 3 3-pointers in this game. See? A post player that dunks and cleans up on the glass and plays defense and does not have to shoot and jack up a lot of threes to be a dominant force in a basketball game. 50 points, 16 to 25 from the field, 17 to 19 from the free throw line. 50 points. By the way, the most points scored in a title-clinching win in NBA Finals history was 50 points set by LSU legend Bob Pettit way back in 1958. That's the last time someone scored 50 points. The most points ever scored in a title-clinching game in NBA Finals history was 50 points by Bob Pettit. In 1958, basketball Hall of Famer, a man who has a ginormous statue outside of the PMAC. Giannis did that last night. He did get some help from his friends. Not P.J. Tucker, obviously. Once again, P.J.'s on the team, not for offense. Chris Middleton chips in 17 points, 5 boards, 5 assists. Brooke Lopez sighting. 10 points, played 27 minutes. Jrue Holiday did not have a good offensive night, 4 of 19, but he did make some sensational plays throughout the game. Did have 11 assists, 12 points, nice double-double for them. Bobby Portis Jr., what a great story for him. 16 points off the bench. They only played 8 players. When Milwaukee and Boom, they get a lot of grief. He gets a lot of grief. You know, they say that he can't win in the playoffs. Look what he did in Atlanta. He couldn't win there in the playoffs. Look what he's done in Milwaukee. You know, they wanted to get rid of him. Well, now he's a world champion. And he made a smart decision to tighten up the rotation. We had Dan Favalli on earlier this week from Bleacher Report. NBA reporter mentioned that because when I asked him what was the difference here, and they said a big difference is Milwaukee decided to go to a smaller rotation. They're playing less players, and it's worked. They only played 8 guys last night. 8. And one of those guys, Jeff Teague, played a whopping 2 minutes. So really, they only played 7 guys in a closeout game in the NBA Finals. 7. That's it. Phoenix had no answer for Giannis. Look, I like DeAndre Ayton. I think he's a good player. Very good player. He's still a little on the skinny side, but he's a good player. He can rebound. He can play defense. And he can give you double-digit scoring. And last night, he gave him 12, 6 rebounds. But who can guard, who can defend Giannis? The answer is no one. He was dominant the entire 6 games of this NBA Finals. Take away last night's 50-point performance. He was dominant the entire Finals. They had no answer for him. He's a matchup nightmare. Because the problem is the modern NBA has shifted to relying on three-pointers, and your bigs, you don't necessarily have traditional dominant centers. You have guys who are essentially power forwards playing the 5 spot who like to go out 10 feet from the basket and shoot. Because everything has now gone to three-point shooting and having bigs, your power forwards and your centers, shoot threes. And Giannis shoots threes, and Joel Embiid shoots threes. But back-to-back years now in the NBA Finals, we've had dominant post players help their teams win championships. And because there's so many few and far between, there's not that many guys that are dominant guys down low. Giannis, Joel Embiid, and Anthony Davis. So when you face a team like Phoenix, a very good team, this is a team that had a 2-0 lead in this finals. In these finals, rather. But they got no one that can slow down Giannis. So you're going to try to slow down Giannis with your how you defend him, which means you're going to take away, which means there's going to have open shots for other guys like Drew Holiday and like Chris Middleton. Phoenix had 4 of their 5 starters scoring double figures last night. Chris Paul, 26 points. He was 11 to 19 from the field. Good shooting percentage. 3-4 from the line. Had 5 assists. But you look at the rest of the guys. You see how they shot from three-point range. I've always said it. The three-pointer can win you ball games. And when you're on, you're tough to beat. Devin Booker last night scored 19 points. He was 8 of 22 shooting the ball from the field. And 0 from 7 from three-point range. Jamison Crowder was out there jacking up shots, wide open shots, and he was missing them. 2 of 9 from three-point range. Chris Paul, 1 for 2. They didn't have a single player on their roster last night that played Phoenix did that made more than 2 three-pointers. Yeah. They only made 5 for the game. 5. In an era where you depend on 3, you only make 5, it's tough to win those games. And if you're Phoenix, you have to make your three-pointers because you can't stop Giannis. 105-98 win. The Milwaukee Bucks are your champions. Giannis is your NBA Finals MVP. We'll talk more about the finals coming up after this timeout. We'll also take your phone calls. 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. You're listening to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. The Milwaukee Bucks, 105-98 win in Game 6 of the NBA Finals. That locks up their first world championship in 50 years. That's right, 50 years. Last time they won, Oscar Robertson was playing for them. That was way back in the day. Giannis is your NBA Finals MVP after a 50-point performance. First, it's the most points scored ever in a closeout game in NBA Finals history. Ties Bob Pettit's record of 50 points back in 1958.
Yeah, it does.
There it is. He's so happy. Once again, I just want to look at Giannis's career. Here we go. Two-time league MVP, five-time All-Star, All-Star Game MVP, which was this year, three-time All-NBA first-team selection, two-time All-NBA second-team selection, NBA Defensive Player of the Year, three-time All-NBA Defensive first-team selection, once NBA All-Defensive second-team selection, most improved player in 2017. He's 26 years old.
And he only started playing at 16 or whatever?
Yeah.
Yeah, but he can't shoot, bro. Can't shoot threes, bro.
He's a dominant player. And you and I were talking about this in the break. You brought up football, where because of the wealth of high-octane passing attacks, really it went from high school up to the NFL.
Trickled up.
Trickled up, not trickled down, because it went up from high school spread starting in Texas and then across the country and then went up to college, and then from college it's been incorporated into the NFL. So you have guys, even average quarterbacks like Kirk Cousins, throwing for 4,000 yards in a season, right? So defenses, especially by how the game is called as well, they've taken away a lot of the hits, they've taken away a lot of the contact off the line of scrimmage between DBs and wide receivers. Offenses have flourished, and defenses in the NFL have had to learn how to defend the pass. And defenses have become more of a pass-first kind of mentality on how they defend. But now we've started to see in the last couple of years that defenses have forgotten how to defend the run.
Lamar Jackson?
They have forgotten how to tackle.
Mm-hmm.
It's because the pendulum swung so much one way to counter, you know, to counterpunch what was coming their way, that some of the things that were fundamental to the game have been lost. Proper tackling technique, how to wrap up, how to defend the run. So when you have guys like a Lamar Jackson who can run as well as he can throw, they don't know how to defend that. Or if you have teams that can run the ball very effectively, they don't know how to defend that. This is a similar thing in the NBA, where the NBA shifted its focus so much on three-pointers. Jack up threes. It doesn't matter if you miss them. Just jack them up, jack them up, jack them up. Because the analytics tell you it's more valuable to jack up a bunch of threes than it is to drive to the basket. Okay? How'd that work out for Phoenix? Phoenix last night was 6 of 25. 6 of 25 from three-point range. That is dreadful. Dreadful. And that was terrible. It just was. Now, to be fair, Milwaukee jacked up even more shots from three-point range. But you know what they had in their ace in the hole? They had the most dominant player on the court. who kept attacking the rim and attacking the paint. And Phoenix had no answer. They didn't have an answer the entire finals on how to slow down a dominant 6'11", 242-pound monster. They had no idea how to slow him down. Couldn't defend him. Couldn't frustrate him. Nothing. It's kind of my point. The NBA's been so focused on having every team built like the Warriors with Klay Thompson and Steph Curry. Here's the interesting part of that, though. The Warriors also had Draymond Green, who is an undersized big, but had no problems doing dirty work for you, playing defense in the paint, and scoring in the paint for your team. You got to have both. And it's not hard to have both of those things. But if you have a dominant big man, Giannis, what's been the knock on him? Oh, he can't shoot. He's not a three-point shooter. He can't shoot from the outside. So, I very much remember Shaquille O'Neal dominating the NBA, and he couldn't shoot. And so, like, if you're a dominant physical specimen and there's no one to match up against you, you can win. You can win. The Bucks just proved that. No one thought they would make it to the finals. No one thought they would get past, what, Brooklyn? Giannis, all they can't. Here they are. They were down 2-0. They came back and won 4 straight. 4 straight! You know why? Because they had the best player on the floor. They had the absolute best player on the floor. It's not even close. I love Devin Booker. Love him. Good, very good young player. Star. My man was 8 of 22 last night. Oh, for 7 from three-point range. When he's hot from three-point range, what happens? He can score 40. When he isn't, he's going to get you 18, 17, 18, 19 points. If Giannis has a bad night shooting from outside the paint, you can still get 30. Look, the league is what it is. It's a shooter's league now. I get that. I'm not debating that, but there's plenty of space for guys like Giannis.
And also, just from a pure entertainment standpoint, what I love about football is that there's some teams that still run an I formation, and in the NFL particularly, that still have I formation and run the ball down your throat. Then they'll play a team like, the Kansas City Chiefs, who run an RPOs and spread offenses and rarely, if ever, go under center. And it's fun because it's diversity in the game. Like, don't you just miss watching a team like the Phoenix Suns with Steve Nash go up against, the Lakers in the 2000s?
Or even go back to when the Suns went to the finals with Charles Barkley and they had Thunder Dan Marley shoot from the outside.
Yeah. I mean, don't you miss that? I mean, just different weird quirkiness in the game.
I like it.
Everyone looks the same now. It's boring.
Also, just like to point this out, Forbes, remember, released their 2021 NBA franchise valuations for market. Phoenix was the 17th. Milwaukee was 20.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Credit to our guy Chris Vanini from The Athletic. A small market team drafts a star player. They build around him. He chooses to stay, which he did. Remember? They were like, oh, Giannis is going to leave. He re-signed with his team. They win a title, and he becomes a megastar. Even with his accent, by the way. And he beats another young rising star in a small market, giving hope to those markets. Imagine thinking this finals was bad for the NBA. The more teams you have that are better, that are good, that are great, the better the league is. That's the other part of this. Devin Booker's a star, young star, they can continue building around him in Phoenix. But Giannis, man, how can you not love that story? And if you get a chance, look at his draft class. All the people selected in front of Giannis. Oh, man. Nerlens Noel, Anthony Bennett. All these players. The best player that was drafted before Giannis was Victor Oladipo, who's a good player. Not a great player, good player. Giannis is like a generational talent, and all those other teams took guys. Just goes to show you, man. Just goes to show. Oh, this guy is this. Look at his measurables. Look at what he can do. Look at his athletic ability. Look what program he played for. More so than any other sport, the NBA is a crapshoot. You have a better idea of what a player can be out of the NFL and baseball. For the NBA, man, I'm just saying. Just saying, man. It's something else. It's something else. Go look at that 2013. It is not great. Not great at all. We do have a poll question of the day to let you know about. Is Giannis the best player in the NBA right now? Yes. MVP and finals champ? No. Not a great shooter. Those are your options. Go leave your votes. Leave your comments on Facebook and Twitter at 1037 The Game. When we come back here on RP3 and Company, we'll talk a little SEC Media Days. Get to hear what the coaches had to say yesterday that took the podium there in Hoover. That's all coming up next right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game, simulcast on Stadium, 32.3 and 133 on LUS. The Houston Astros are one of the best teams in baseball, and you can be part of the action with our latest Astro Weekend Getaway. Up next, the Astros will take on the Seattle Mariners the weekend of August 19th through the 21st. Go register in the 1037 The Game Clubhouse at 1037thegame.com for your chance to score 4 tickets and a $200 Visa gift card for one of those series games at Minute Maid Park. Astro Weekend Getaways are powered by Butcher AC, J&J Exterminating, and 1037 The Game, Acadiana Sports Station. Go vote on our poll question of the day. Of course, it's NBA Finals related. The Bucks win their first championship in 50 years. Last night, as they close out the Phoenix Suns there in Milwaukee, after being down 2-0, they win 4 straight. Our poll question of the day is Giannis the best player in the NBA now? 86% of you say yes, 14% say no, but Steve has a comment. And Steve, you commented, so we're going to have to comment on your comment. Steve says he's the best player on the team that won the finals, not a good outside shooter, average three-point shooter, good rebounder, poor foul shooter, and good defender. Not the best in any category. How can he be the best in the game? Steve, Giannis has been named the NBA Defensive Player of the Year, and he's earned all NBA Defensive Player honors nearly half a dozen times. And he's been selected to the All-NBA team multiple times, and he's a 2-time league MVP. So, do you want the 6'11" guy to be a dominant three-point shooter? The only a good defender, not the best in any category. People argue that he's the best defensive player in the league. So that would make him great. I have no problem with the critical of he's not a good free throw shooter or a three-point shooter. Absolutely. That's not his game. But Shaq couldn't shoot threes either, and he was a terrible free throw shooter, and he was the most dominant player in the game for a decade.
Tim Duncan?
Timmy didn't have a three-point shot, considered the greatest power forward of all time. So once again, I understand we live in the era of three-point shooter, but, I mean, do you think James Harden's better than Giannis? James Harden loves to shoot three-pointers. Many times he makes them. A lot of times he doesn't. Call me old-fashioned. I like the dominant post player. That's me. But that's how I roll. Is that how you roll?
But so even if, like, okay, so he's not a great three-point shooter. Fine, whatever. But even if you agreed with the argument that, well, he's just a good defender, there's still the argument of, well, he's more well-rounded than, say, James Harden or Steph Curry. He's much more well-rounded.
Yeah, he can't shoot threes. Okay. He's not a good free throw. But Shaq dominated the league by not being a good free throw shooter and didn't shoot three-pointers. Dominated the league. Are there other guys out there? Yeah, look, man, Luka's coming. Zion's developing his game. Luka looks like he's going to be a multiple MVP because he can do so many different things. All these guys are under the age of like 25, 26 years old. The league is in great shape. But keep your comments coming on our poll question of the day. Let's quickly head out to the hotline. Welcome on our guy, Halftime. Halftime, good morning to you. Bud, how you doing?
I'm doing good. I want to say first, this was one of the best NBA finals I've seen in a while because, honestly, even though the media tried, there really was no bad guy, if you get what I'm saying.
The only people
that were, you know, would be upset is the Phoenix Suns. And if the Phoenix Suns were the one, the only people that would have been real upset would have been the Milwaukee Bucks. But as a basketball fan, it was refreshing. You seen them play, it was refreshing. I loved it. I loved the whole – it didn't matter to me who won. I was entertained. The thing I want to say is I heard another sports announcer, if I could say his name, Shannon Sharp, he said – he brought up a good point about Giannis. He said, I mean, how fair would it be if Giannis had Steph Curry handles a shot like Kevin Durant? It's like he brought that analogy. He was saying how everybody's looking at the flaws of Giannis. They're looking at his flaws. And you just said it. Nobody cared about the flaws of Shaq. Shaq dominated the league, couldn't shoot a free throw to save his life. Everybody, they just made a joke about it and didn't even make a big deal about it because you knew he was that dominant. He is dominant like Shaq. I mean, I would say as Shaq, but he's dominant. And everybody's looking at his flaws. How fair would that be if he was coming down like a freight train like LeBron, had the handles like Steph Curry, and shoot like Steph Curry, and play like Kevin Durant? I mean, come on. It wouldn't even be fair. That would be the first thing you say, it's not fair. They'll be trying to see if he's on steroids and stuff. Let's just enjoy what we had, what we saw. It was two good basketball teams, and, you know, everybody complained about the super teams. Let's think about it. It was no super team. It was two great basketball teams. Let's just enjoy it. I just hate how they start with all this, oh, is he the best player? He's a great player. If he's the best player, so what? He's a great player. Give the man his props for what he did. He stuck with his team. He could have went somewhere else. He stuck with his team. He helped him win the championship. And he's looking forward to try to win another one. It's just refreshing for what we've been seeing. You guys have a good one.
Appreciate your call, Halftime. Have a great day, bud. We do this thing, right, where we have a tendency to pick apart people's games. We don't appreciate the greatness because we're too busy tearing them down for their flaws. It's a very weird thing. And we all do it to some extent. A lot of the national shows have made a lot of money doing that, right? Look. Is Giannis's game perfect? No. You can make the argument that you would take Kevin Durant as the best player in the league or in basketball. You can make that argument, and I may even agree with you. But to discount Giannis because he doesn't shoot three-pointers, it's just silly. It's just silly because Giannis does things that KD can't do. And KD can do a lot of things that Giannis can't do. Not everyone is LeBron James. LeBron James can do everything. But LeBron is also on the backside of his career. Not saying that to be negative, just being honest. Father Time is undefeated. So, I mean, Giannis is 26. He can still work on his game. He can still develop his game. Think about that for a minute. How scary is that? that a guy that talented, that big and that talented, is still working at developing his game. Look, I think you still have, you're talking about best players in the league? Steph Curry, Kevin Durant. You can still probably mention LeBron James. Giannis. Luka's coming, by the way. Zion, if he keeps developing. And let's give a shout-out to our guy, Drew Holiday. By the way, back-to-back seasons that a Pelicans player is traded, and to the team that they're traded to, they win an NBA championship. Pels.
Oh, no. But let's talk about that for a second, though. Zion's watching this game, I imagine, and thinking, you know, okay, he doesn't have to be, you don't have to be in a big market to be a big star. You don't have to. You have to just win.
Correct. Or you just have to have a personality. I mean, look, Russell Westbrook is a star, and he played most of his career in Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
Even developed a fashion line while playing in Oklahoma City. You see what I'm saying? So, I mean, Durant became a star while playing in Oklahoma City. So you don't have to be in a major market. That just doesn't exist anymore because of access and because of media, social media, and how you can get your message out and your products out so much easier than you used to. I get where you're driving at, though. Does he look at this as a good thing or a bad thing? Does Zion look at this and go, hey, small market, they built around him, right? The Bucks built around Giannis. They had some lean years. I mean, this first year, I think he was in the league, his rookie year, they won 15 or 16 games. They were awful. He was a young player. So, if you're Zion, do you look at that and go, small market team, they built around him. And look what they've been able to do. Now, they drafted Giannis and Middleton the same draft class. So they paired them up together, and they grew together. And Chris has really kind of flourished, which has been interesting to see as well. So do you look at that and go, small market team, fan base loves the team. Look at that arena. Look how great they are. They built around it. They kept working at it, kept working at it. And Giannis is now an NBA champion at age 26. He can look at that as a good thing, right? My only question is, you could tell early on in Milwaukee that they were building around Giannis and that they were committed to that. Does anyone believe that the Pelicans are building around Zion? They say they are. How's that going so far? That's why I've said this offseason is huge for the Pels. In particular, David Griffin. Because he has not done a good job, and I'm being kind when I say he has not done a good job, with surrounding Zion with free agents or veteran players. And he's done poorly back-to-back off seasons. And now he's going to have to move guys again. Steven Adams and probably Eric Bledsoe pop to mind. You got to put together the right pieces, man. You got to show some type of improvement here. You got to put this team together and build around. Have B.I. accept that number two role. Let Zion be the face. And then build around those two guys. You can make something happen. Something nice happen. But congratulations to Drew Holiday. Quality guy. Does a lot for the community. Gets to win a world championship. So shout out to him. We said we were going to get to SEC Media Day. We will. Just got delayed. Got a great phone call from halftime. More RP3 and Company coming up. You're listening to Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game, simulcast on Stadium 32.3 and 133 on LUS. Oh, LSU's going to play in the historic Rose Bowl Stadium for the first time when it opens the season against UCLA. You can be there for all the exciting action with 103.7 The Game's Tiger Road Trip Giveaway. Enter in the 103.7 The Game Clubhouse at 103.7thegame.com. to score round-trip chartered flight from BR to L.A. That's Baton Rouge to Los Angeles, by the way. Three-night hotel accommodations, hotel airport transfers, game day tickets, and an invite to a pregame party adjacent to the stadium. This Tiger Road Trip is driven by Sterling Automotive Group. Total Sports Travel and 103.7 The Game, Acadiana Sports Station. Make sure to vote on our poll question of the day. Is Giannis the best player in the NBA right now? There's a lot of good contenders. Our poll question is yes or no. But there's a lot of good contenders, right? Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, Giannis, Luka. Luka's coming. We want to hear from you. Right now, 81% of you say yes, 19% say no. Keep those comments coming on Facebook and Twitter at 103.7 The Game. Who's the best player in the NBA right now for you, Mr. Diaz?
Oh, that's a good question. I'd still probably...
Go KD?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's just, at the end of the day, I think the Bucks had a better team. And if you saw what I saw from KD when they played the Bucks in the playoffs, in the semifinals, or the conference quarterfinals.
It was the semis.
Yeah, semis, yeah. Whatever. Yeah, semis. I just said that's the best player. Like, don't overthink it. That's the best player in basketball right now. Now, yeah. I like Giannis more, but no, I just got to go with KD.
Yeah. But you remember when they told us that Brooklyn was just going to win the title because they just assembled all those players?
I never bought that.
It rarely works. Even when they do assemble them and throw them together like that, like they did with the Miami Heat with LeBron and D-Wade and Bosch, remember they lost that first finals. Sometimes it takes a while to get over. Plus, Brooklyn has injury issues. And Kyrie being Kyrie. So, still, I don't know about that team's chemistry. Lots of NBA talk in hour number one. Hour number two, we're going to talk a little SEC Media Days, day two. We'll keep taking your phone calls as well. You're listening to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Good show so far. It's about to get better here in hour number two. We're about 30 minutes away from talking to Jarrett Rozier, our guy who updates us on the world of recruiting. I mean, he's got stuff to talk about. Raging Cajuns continue hitting up the Lone Star State for recruits. LSU keeps doing their thing. We're going to get the latest on recruiting 30 minutes from right now. But my man Jarrett also on the fly earlier this week decided that he was going to fly up to Chicago and then get with some friends and drive over to Milwaukee to watch the game near the arena. He could still be up right now.
He loves to go to games, doesn't he?
I've said this multiple times. My man lives the best version of his life. I'll just say that. My man lives the best version of his life.
Some people are just event people, man.
They are.
I can respect it.
That's right. Not everyone has a 75-year-old man in a retirement community living inside of them like you do.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay. I'm kind of that way now, too. So it's okay. But I'm far, far, far old, far, more, far much older than you are.
Some people are just event people. Like, even my parents. But I think at the end of the day, you get it from your parents, right? Whether you like to admit it or not.
That's true.
I think, you know, my parents are kind of the same way. They're like, you know, Nick, when we were younger, like, we were kind of homebodies anyway. So I think I just get it from them. It's just genetics.
It's just genetics, he says. Oh, Bucks, of course, won their first NBA championship in 50 years last night by defeating the Phoenix Suns in Game 6. Giannis goes off for 50. That ties the most points ever in a clinching game in NBA Finals history, tying the record set by former LSU legend Bob Pettit, who accomplished the feat back in 1958. Poll question of the day is Giannis the best player in the NBA now? He is a two-time league MVP. He is a five-time All-NBA defensive player, five-time NBA All-NBA player, former defensive player of the year, multiple-time All-Star, All-Star MVP, now NBA Finals MVP and world champion. He's only 26. Is he the best player right now? That's our poll question of the day. Look, got a lot of strong candidates. Kevin Durant, probably is still the best player. Probably. But the guy with the accent over in Dallas is coming. For everyone, by the way. For everyone.
I am one more great season away from him from naming him the best player in the league.
It feels that way, right?
If he just improves just a little bit from what he did this past season, he's the best player in the league.
He's trending that way, right? Yeah, he's trending that way. So you could say, you know, Luka is coming. He's right there on the cusp of kind of taking, getting on that mantle, taking over that mantle. But Kevin Durant's still in the mix. You could still argue LeBron James, even though I think he's on the back end of the career, but he's still, look, in the best player of his generation and one of the three greatest players of all time. So Steph Curry kind of had a resurgent season this year. When he's on, there's no one better because of what he brings to the game, the best three-point shooter in the league's history. So lots of guys to choose from. But is it Giannis right now? We want to hear from you. Leave your comments on Facebook and Twitter at 1037 The Game. But it's just not NBA Finals we got for you. Houston Astros, woo! You know, people were worried they dropped 2 of 3 to Chicago White Sox on that road trip, but they didn't get swept. They come back home to Minute Maid Park. They win the first game as Yordan Alvarez ends his 0-for-22 streak with a 2-run jack. Then last night they take the game against the Cleveland Indians 9-3, 14 hits. Now my man Kevin Foote would probably say it's too many runs. That's not a glorious victory. Not a glorious victory. Score too many runs, need to save them. Even though they're going to win the series now because they've taken the first two games. Altuve homers not once but twice in the game. Garcia picks up the win, much needed win for him. He's far better than his 7-5 overall record suggests, by the way. The ERA tells me a lot. It's under 3, well under 3. But the Astros were winners, 9-3. They've taken now the first two games of that series against the Tribe. Let's talk also about what happened at SWAC Media Day, shall we? So, there's been some conflicting reports here about this. So, SWAC, Southwestern Athletic Conference, home of the home conference of Grambling and Southern, and Texas Southern, and Alcorn State, Jackson State, Alabama A&M, I could go on, held its media days in Birmingham yesterday. And Southern, by the way, was picked to finish second in the SWAC West behind Alcorn State, who, by the way, is being moved from the east to the west due to some realignment in the conference. Jordan Lewis, the All-American defensive lineman, earned first-team recognition and was named the preseason defensive player of the year for the SWAC. And the Jaguars placed 10 players on the All-SWAC preseason team, so shout-out to the Jaguars. But that was not the story, unfortunately, of the day. The story of the day from Birmingham was Deion Sanders, who apparently walked out of the event after being called Deion. He cited, "You don't call Nick Saban Nick." He wanted to be called coach, so apparently he walked out. Now, I've also seen a lot of people report on this, and then I've seen other people say that was actually his last question of the day. So it's not like as if he walked out early. Someone with the actual SWAC communications team tweeted this out, that it was his last question. So here's the thing. Even if it is the last question, I love Deion. Let me be upfront about this. I love Deion as a player. You could argue he's the best cover corner in NFL history. Deion loves himself. Deion was that way when he was at Florida State. It was that way when he played in the NFL for the Falcons and played baseball for the Braves and the Yankees. It was that way when he played his entire career in the NFL when he went to the, you know, played for the 49ers and played for the Cowboys and the Ravens. Deion loves Deion. Always has. Great promoter, self-promoter, has an ego the size of the First South Farm Credit Studios, which we're broadcasting from, by the way. They're lovely. Here's the thing. This whole thing about being called coach, look, out of habit for me as a reporter spending 20 years in print media, I call coaches just naturally coach. A lot of times we do that because, you know, if you're dealing with a ton, you just call them by, you just call, hey, coach. You call them up on the phone. Hey, coach, how's it going? Yes. Hey, coach. So I get that part of it, okay? But Deion just wrapped up his first year as a coach. And Deion promotes himself as Deion Sanders, not as Coach Sanders. Deion's a celebrity. You understand what I'm saying? Deion's a Hall of Famer and one of the most recognizable people on the face of the planet. Are you really going to get bent out of shape because someone called you Deion in a press conference? You know, people made the joke yesterday, I'm going to call you by the name your mama gave you. And your mama gave you the name Deion, so that's what I'm going to call you. And the other part of this, what has Deion earned as a coach? He's brought a lot of publicity to Jackson State. He's got a lot of headlines. He didn't win a lot of games there in the spring season. So he's brought a big profile to HBCUs and to the SWAC, but a lot of people could argue he's not even really a coach. So are we really getting bent out of shape if these reports are true? That you're going to walk out of a press conference because, you know, you're citing Nick Saban? Nick Saban's considered the greatest college football coach of all time. He has national championship rings that fill up two hands. You don't even have a winning season under your belt as a coach. Let's put things in perspective. That's all I'm saying. Once again, I love Deion, Nick. I love Deion. But he's been a shameless self-promoter his entire career. Now you're going to be mad because someone calls you Deion? Really? This is what we doing? Really?
He's playing chess while we're all playing checkers. He got us talking.
Oh,
he got us talking.
Like the people that stole his bag in the locker room. Yeah, yeah,
yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah, yeah, I know.
Just
like, look, I love him, I do, but come on, man, what you doing? Be better than that, bud. Be better than that. Let's stay in college, shall we? Sun Belt released its preseason teams and its predicted order of finish yesterday. You can read all about it at 1037thegame.com. Raging Cajuns, as you heard in the two-minute drill by the man Nick Diaz, are predicted to win the Sun Belt West yet again for the fourth straight year. Coastal Carolina was predicted to win the East, but they did so by tiebreaker. It was split between them and Appalachian State. But Coastal got more first-place votes, so Coastal was predicted to win the East. That is interesting to me, not because... It's not interesting to me because I find it surprising, because I actually kind of believe that. Everyone just thinks it's going to be Louisiana versus Coastal Carolina for the Sun Belt Championship. Watch out for Appalachian State. I know they lose some players, but they're salty about Coastal beating them last year and ending their run of multiple in a row championships. Don't sleep on the Mountaineers from Boone, North Carolina. I'm just telling you that now. Just telling you that now. Not surprised by the predicted order of finish. Grayson McCall, as expected, preseason offensive player of the year. The linebacker from Troy got preseason defensive player of the year. Cajuns well represented on the team. Couple of guys on the first team, couple of guys on the second team. Surprised, I guess my biggest surprise on these kind of things, Zion Hill, the former Catholic High of New Iberia star and long been a stalwart across the defensive line for the Raging Cajuns, was only a second-team selection. I think you could make the strong argument that he deserved to be on the first team. But as Billy Napier will likely tell us tomorrow while we're broadcasting live from Sunbelt Media Day, and we'll interview him in the afternoon when the Cajuns take the field, and we'll have him on either my show or Kevin Foote's show, Footnotes, is that doesn't matter to them. It just doesn't. It doesn't matter to them. But they have been picked to win the Sunbelt West yet again. Which, let's be honest, is to be expected. Man, let me tell you, that NIL stuff. So, this got reported on yesterday. Alabama quarterback Bryce Young, who's not, has yet to start a game, by the way, for the Crimson Tide, has made almost $1 million with NIL deals. This is like, what, 2 months? He has 22 pass attempts and 9 carries in his career. My man's almost made $1 million with NIL deals already. This is going to become standard operating procedure. If you're a big-time recruit and you go to a big-time program, guess what? There will be money for you. And lots of it. Lots of it. Can you imagine the type of money if this would have went in effect during the national championship season for Joe Burrow?
Oh.
Or Ja'Marr Chase?
Oh.
Dude. Just come on. It's just ridiculous. I think back of some of the previous stars of college football. Tim Tebow, Vince Young, Reggie Bush. What kind of ridiculous money would they have gotten?
I think Tim Tebow would have made the most. Because somebody asked me this other day, I was like, which former college athlete would have made the most? Tebow?
It's Tebow.
He's still getting jobs a decade later.
Still sells jerseys.
He's horrible.
Still sells jerseys. Still sells, some guys. Some guys have that it factor, man, and they're just loved. Just, this is what it's going to be now. I hope everyone's prepared. Bryce Young could be really good, or he could be awful. But my man's got money. Done. This is the new world we live in. Oh, man, we covered a lot of stuff there. We'll be more than happy to take your phone calls. 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. You listen to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game, simulcast on Stadium 32.3 and 133 on LUS. Oh, let's head out to the hotline. Welcome on our guy, Jamie, a.k.a. Mr. Green. It will flip to Mr. Green, a.k.a. Jamie, once school begins once again. What's up, bud?
Good morning. How are you this morning?
Man, you know, I got a pep in my step, my friend. I got a pep in my step. I'm ready to rock and roll. I'm ready to chop it up with you, sir.
Well, I am glad. I've been listening to you guys when I can. I've actually been getting some much-needed sleep, but the school right around the corner trying to get back to my regular schedule.
I got you. What's on your mind, brother?
So I got a question for you, and I'm not making it about hockey, but it does have something to do with hockey, and it's this. The NHL has an expansion draft tonight for a new team in Seattle.
That's right, the Kraken.
That's right, the Kraken. And my cousins are all excited because they live up there. But this is the second new team the NHL has had in less than 5 years. And so there's expansion going on, shows interest in the NHL. But my question is this. Do you think any of the other major sports might have any expansion sometime soon? And if so, which one do you think it is and why?
I like that. It's a good question. All right. Thank you, Jamie. Have a great day, bud. I keep hearing Rob Manfred wants to expand baseball. I keep hearing that. You know, there's been talk of relocating the Oakland Athletics. There's also talk about putting a team back in Montreal. There's been some groundswell of support for that. I've heard putting a franchise in Nashville. I don't know how realistic it is for baseball, especially with the way they've gutted the minor league system the last 2 years, even before COVID. But I have heard that. Oh, expansion. You know, you keep hearing rumblings, Jamie, of the NFL wants to put a team overseas, a couple of teams overseas. Could they do that? Would it be expansion or just simply moving a franchise over? But if I had to pick one league to expand, even though you've heard the stuff about Major League Baseball and the NFL, I think it's the NBA. I think they really want to put a team back in Seattle. I think Seattle wants there to be a team back in Seattle. Obviously, they're getting the hockey team there, but just makes sense for them to put a team back in Seattle. So, now, is that a possibility of just relocating the Charlotte Bobcats that they can't get their act together? Possibly, but if I had to bet on one of the other three major professional leagues expanding, I think it would be the NBA trying to put a team in Seattle, if I had to guess. That's if I had to guess. Good phone call, though. Good question. Let's head back out to the hotline. Welcome on, Reynolds, to the show. Good morning, brother. What's on your mind?
Morning, beautiful day. You know, with this deal with this guy from Alabama, I want to get your take on this. Where do you see this going? Because, I mean, who's to say that someone, let's say someone's playing at LSU and someone from the West Coast from USC, some dealership who has ties at USC, tells our best player, okay, why don't you come play for us? I'll give you $3 million in an endorsement deal. I mean, where is this going to go? I mean, I see this becoming the haves and the have-nots, where all these big-time schools will be able to, you know, all these, not lobbyists, donors.
Boosters.
And all these.
Yeah.
Huh?
Boosters. Yeah.
Boosters.
Yeah.
You know, will pull their money and get with all these big companies. And, yeah, we're going to get you this guy. You know, man, it boggles my mind on how far this will go. What do you think?
Reynolds, appreciate the phone call, brother. Have a tremendous day. I love that question, by the way. Because, Reynolds, I hate to say it, you're exactly right. The rich are going to get richer here. The big boys at the table, the big dogs, are going to continue eating when it comes to this. Because this is what it's going to boil down to. Bryce Young's has already made nearly $1 million in NIL. He's not even started a game because he's at Alabama. So if you go to Alabama, Clemson, LSU, USC, Texas, Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan, what are the big boys, right? You're going to get paid. You're going to make bank. And that's going to be incentive for your four-star, your five-star prospects, your blue-chip guys to continue going to the big boy schools. Because there's going to be boosters and people that make donations and sponsors that are going to have money waiting for you. And it's going to be very much like the Wild Wild West for a while. Just not a couple years, probably 5, 7, 8, maybe even a decade. Because people really don't know how they're going to monitor this, how they're going to kind of, you know, rope it in, so to speak. So while they're trying to figure that out, it's going to be this way. Think of it, if you've ever seen the 30 for 30 on The Best There Never Was.
Oh, yeah.
When they talked about what it was like back in the day for the old Southwest Conference. With Arkansas, TCU, Texas, Oklahoma.
Pony Access.
That one as well. Both of them, Pony Access and that one, because they both talked about recruiting and how it was in the 70s, in the early 80s, in the state of Texas in particular, and how duffel bags of money showed up on your door, or a new car was. I mean, they had the thing about The Best There Never Was The Best There Ever Was where one team bought him the car, and then when he signed with them to go play to Oklahoma, they took over the payments for the car. So, look, that type of corruption when it comes to recruiting has always been there. It's long been part of the game. This is what it's going to be. This is what it's going to be. But now it's kind of out in the open. And, yes, you're going to have guys that are going to be this way that are going to make a ton of money. You're going to have guys, prepare yourself for this, college football fan. You're going to have guys who are going to be marginal players. You're going to have guys that are going to be backups that are going to be making money.
That's already happened. LSU's backup left tackle, Oh, gosh. I can't remember which one it was. But their backup left tackle has two NIL deals on his Instagram. One is for, like, a sunglass hut.
Yeah.
Backup.
So, look, this is what it's going to be. And you're going to have guys that are going to make major money. You're going to have guys like Bryce Young that are going to make $1 million, $2 million, and may never turn out to be anything. That's the world that we're going to live in. That's what college football and college athletics is going to become. That's going to be the reality. Is it going to make it crazy? Yes. Is it going to make recruiting interesting? I will be interested with the NIL deals. A lot of them are regionally based, right?
Yeah.
How that's going to impact recruiting. Is it going to make it more difficult for, say, LSU to recruit in New Jersey and California now that, say, in California, USC or UCLA, UCLA is not very good, but USC or any place else, the regional teams are now going to have supporters and sponsors that are going to want to keep the kids closer to home because they can offer them money. You understand what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I'm interested to see how NIL impacts recruiting on that level. Is that going to force people? And then, you know, is recruiting going to become less national for teams and more regional because the money for NILs is going to be from your regional base, if that makes any sense?
No, I've always thought that, but I'm starting to think less so because at the end of the day, Bryce Young is from L.A.
Right.
He's from L.A., but at the end of the day, like so to his direct question about, well, would an LSU star player just leave to go to Los Angeles because some movie executive who graduated from USC put him in a new action film for like five seconds or something? It's like a cameo.
Yeah, you get a speaking part. You get your SAG card and you get a payday.
Yeah, and you get a payday.
Oh, you're
and
Fast
my answer
and Furious
to that is at the
13.
End of the day, yeah. And my answer to that is that at the end of the day, players want to play and players want to win.
But if they have a chance to play and win at both places, and one of them's and they get an opportunity to make more money at one place, that's going to play a role in this.
Yeah, but USC, they ain't Alabama. At least not right now. Not right now.
Not right now. Right. Not right now. Be interesting to see. And I also can't wait to start watching some of the more ridiculous NILs, like some of the things that you'll be sponsoring. Like just, you know, who's got money to spend? Who's got money to throw around, so to speak? Oh, man, we got to take a timeout. We'll keep this discussion going, but we got to bring on our first guest of today's show. Jarrett Rozier hopefully will join us because I do believe he's still in Milwaukee celebrating the Bucks' NBA Finals victory. We'll talk with Jarrett, the latest recruiting when it comes to the Raging Cajuns and the LSU Tigers. That's coming up next right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7. The Game simulcast on Stadium 32.3 and 133 on LUS. We have all heard the nightmare scenarios when it comes to home renovation projects. Over budget, not done right. The work is shoddy. Yeah, you've heard it. Your family members, your friends, your colleagues at work, they've told you all about it. Why don't you avoid having any potential home renovation nightmare and go visit my friends over at Lafayette Marble and Granite. You can check out their website at lmgelite.com. Or visit their showroom on I-49 North across from Hub City Ford and the Jockey Lot. Look, Chris and his team, they're listening to the show, heard me talk about our renovation project with our master bathroom, could not find the right granite countertops for the vanity. We went to multiple places. Let me tell you, not a ton of fun with my wife. I was like, hey, let's just get this. She's like, no. She had a vision. I wanted her to be happy. You know what they say, fellas. Happy wife, happy life. We couldn't find it. She couldn't find the right cut. She couldn't find the right granite. Guess what? Chris called me up, said, hey, we want the opportunity to earn your business, and that's exactly what they did. Not only did they have the exact countertops my wife wanted, they could give them, make them in the cut that she wanted. They installed it professionally, timely, affordable. Took a nightmare scenario, made it a dream experience, so much so that we are going to be working with them yet again next year when we do our kitchen remodel. If you want to avoid those renovation nightmares, go visit my friends over at Lafayette Marble and Granite. Once again, their website is lmgelite.com, or simply visit their showroom on I-49 North across from Hub City Ford and the Jockey Lot. Trust me, you will not regret it. Our guy Jarrett Rozier always shows up on time, always comes on here to RP3 and Company to give us the latest updates on the world of recruiting. We love him. But you know what? My man went to Milwaukee last night to celebrate a Bucks victory. Probably enjoyed himself. So we're going to let him off the hook. We'll pick up our recruiting talk with Mr. Rozier next week. Our man's sleeping.
Is he a Bucks fan?
Yes.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yes, he has old school Bucks jerseys, too.
Why is he a Bucks fan?
I forget why. I just know my man flew up to Chicago, then got with some friends and drove from Chicago to Milwaukee, which is not a terrible drive, by the way, and then watched the game near the arena. And I texted him last night, but yes, he did not answer our emails and text messages, and he goes straight to voicemail, which tells me my man enjoyed himself last night. And you know what? He's sleeping, recharging the batteries. He deserves a week off. That's okay. That just means we can talk about SEC Media Days. We can also take your phone calls. Hotline's open, 337-706-0111. If you want to get your phone calls in, now's the time. Let's talk a little SEC Media Days day two, shall we? Let's start off with Kirby Smart, Georgia coach. For a guy who's had a lot of success there with the Bulldogs, leading them to division championships, leading them to an SEC championship, leading them to a national championship game, sure does seem like there's pressure on him. Pressure on him to win because of all the recruiting classes, and it hasn't resulted. All those top-ranked recruiting classes have not resulted in a national championship. Well, Kirby took the stage yesterday. Obviously, they got a great team. Once again, they'll be a top-10 team. And one of the strengths of this team could be their secondary. And Smart, who played in the secondary back in the day for the Bulldogs, talked about the back end of his defense.
Well, we're going to do it by committee. We're going to find that out in fall camp. You know, we've got two young men that come to us by way of portal. Then we've got a group of guys on our current roster that are talented and we're highly recruited players that we think are going to be able to help us. So when Tyson and Stokes took over, we had just lost players. And when they leave, we're going to have to find new players. It's part of the off season and part of the recruiting process to figure out who's going to help us in those areas. And we've got capable players in the secondary. We don't have the depth that we are used to. We will need to avoid injury in that area.
Look, they're going to have to reload on the back end. But Kirby's done a very nice job of being able to manage that while he's been at Georgia. They brought in people through the transfer portal. Georgia's back end of the defense is going to be fine. There's question marks. Kirby's going to play it down because, well, that's what you do, especially if you coached under Nick Saban. You're going to look at things and try to focus on the negative, or at least people think that you're focusing on the negative. The Georgia secondary is going to be just fine, by the way. Lots of hype around the quarterback position there for UGA. JT Daniels is the man that's going to be under center. This is what Kirby had to say about a signal caller.
It was a tough decision because we had Jamie Newman. We felt good about Jamie from the tape we had seen, being around Jamie. Jamie was with us for that brief window of off-season workouts before COVID hit. So we didn't really know because we didn't get to go through spring practice. But when JT went in the portal, we felt like, you know, the way to improve your roster is to make sure that you have all positions covered. We weren't sure what we had at quarterback, and not knowing what we had, even past Jamie being 1 year, we felt like JT could be the guy after Jamie. And it was a situation where we had a little bit of a quarterback deficit, and we were able to improve our roster, getting Jamie, getting Stetson, who came back from junior college, and then getting JT on the roster. So I'm excited to see what he can do this year. I think his growth has been more physical than mental.
Can he be the quarterback they've been waiting for? They've had a lot of guys come through there. A lot of guys with hype, a lot of guys transfer out. Can JT Daniels be the guy? It'll be interesting to see. How about our old friend Eric Gilbert? He's at Georgia for now. Gatorade Player of the Year, top tight end prospect that was at LSU for a cup of coffee and decided to want to come back, flirted with Florida and Dan Mullen, ended up deciding to go to Georgia. This is what Kirby had to say about the star tight end.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot of communication there. It was a time where, you know, he was back home training, working out. He was in the portal, but nobody really knew what he was going to do. There was a thought that he may go back to LSU. Obviously, there was a time where he was committed to Florida, but I never spent a lot of time worrying about it. You know, we worry about the players that we get and not the ones we don't. I learned a long time ago that I can't control the decisions of 18, 19-year-olds, so we just told him he has an opportunity here. If he's interested, let us know. And it wasn't a constant pursuit and not something that we consumed ourselves with.
That's the appropriate answer. I mean, they obviously don't know they'd love to have him. But you already saw how indecisive Eric was. If you're Georgia, you just let them know, we want you, we'd love to have you here. And then you just have to have the mindset, if he shows up, he shows up. And if he signs, you know, transfers, he transfers. Can't really predict these things because look how unpredictable he's been early on in his career. Let's talk a little Tennessee Volunteers football, shall we? Because Josh Heupel's the new head coach there. He's one of three new head coaches in the SEC. He got to the podium yesterday. Former UCF coach who did a nice job there. Is he the guy to help turn turn around things at Tennessee? Oh, man, it's been 20 years of false hope there on Rocky Top. But could he be the guy to turn it around? Well, look, Heupel addressed that directly yesterday, saying he is there in Knoxville to add to the program's legacy.
You come to Tennessee. I came to Tennessee because you want to be a part of an iconic program where the fan base is passionate, loves it, breathes it. It's 365 days out of the year. You know, I said in my introductory press conference, like, when it's recruiting season, they care about recruiting. They care about spring ball. And, I mean, they want to know what's going on in summer workouts. You want to be at a place where football matters 365 days out of the year. The passion of our fan base is unsurpassed anywhere. And it's our challenge as coaches and players to celebrate the great traditions there but put a new age approach on it and get us back to where we need to be.
I think he's a good offensive-minded coach. I'll be interested to see what he does there. But everyone says their fan base is the best in the world. Can we just stop saying that, coaches and fans and players? Can you just stop saying we have the best fans in the world?
Well, hold on a second. Let me defend the coaches. Because what are they supposed to say?
I don't care.
Oh, okay.
I want my coach to win. I've long said this. I don't want my coach to kiss butt to the fans. I don't want my coach to be nice. I don't care if he's nice. I don't care if he's a nice guy. I want a killer. I want a coach that's going to come in and murder the competition and win me championships. That's all I care about. That's all I care about. So, for me, that's all I care about. That's all I've ever cared about. I don't need him to say, we got the best fans of the world. I don't care. I get what you're saying. You got to placate the fans. I get it. But, no. At the end of the day, I don't care. Like, I don't care if you're a nice guy. I don't care if you're the... I just need you to come in dedicated to winning. That's all I care about. I don't care about your personality. I don't even have to like you. But if you make my team win, that's all that matters to me. That's all that matters. You're coaching a team to win games. That's all that matters. That's all that matters to me. As a fan, that's all that matters.
Well, I 100% agree with you. I was just talking about, like, as far as coaches speak is concerned, you know.
Just take it out. Let's just make you and I, well, look, you want to start us calling the new baseball coach at LSU, Coach JJ.
Sure.
We're making that happen. Let's add it. Let's take it up a notch and get coaches to stop saying that we have the best fans in the world. Let's make that happen. I think between you and I, our powers, Twin Towers, we can make it happen.
Twin Towers. Believe it or not, that was actually one of the nicknames I had in middle school basketball. There are two guys. One of them is in the NFL actually right now. It was me and another guy. We were the Twin Towers.
Of course you did.
I mean, look, I get what he said. I just don't. If a coach says that, I understand what he's saying. I don't. It doesn't bother me. But I'm with you. I don't have to like a coach, but at the same time, I understand he has to rally the.
Tell
the,
me,
the how,
I don't need you to rally me. I just need you to go out there and put together a game plan to crush the faces of the other team. That's all I need. That's
Agreed.
All I want. That's all I want. We'll put the SEC Media Day stuff on hold. Is the Antagonator still on the line? Is he still waiting patiently?
I think so.
Well, let's find out. Let's bring him on. Antagonator, good morning. Nope, Antagonator's gone. The Antagonator did not want to wait anymore. If the Antagonator wants to call back, I'll be more than happy to bring him back on.
I was going to say something about Tennessee before we got off topic here.
Yes.
About the whole press conference. I don't care about press conferences. Either way, I was going to say that I think Heupel is going to look at what Lane Kiffin is doing at Ole Miss and say, that'll be my model.
There you go.
Just.
Fast-paced
offense. Fast-paced offense. It's just, hey, we don't care. Let's just go. Let's just get through this for the first 2 years. Sell it, recruits that, and then that's how we'll get back to winning.
And you can work on the defense later.
Yes. Because what defense is really all about, how many great players do you have? After that, I mean.
Great athletes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what it boils down to. And if you can turn things around offensively and start winning games, then you can do that. So, Josh Heupel, one of the three new coaches. Shane Beamer, the other one at South Carolina.
And that poor bastard.
At Vanderbilt.
Clark Lee.
God bless him.
Hey, he's a Nashville boy, born and bred, and Vanderbilt's his alma mater.
Wanted the job. God bless him. If I see him, I'll shake his hand. I'll be like, God bless you, sir, for your service. Because you've decided to take on coaching the Vanderbilt Commodores in football. Oh, we got to take a timeout. More RP3 and Company coming up right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Simulcast on Stadium, 32.3 and 133 on LUS. I got all types of skills. You have no idea. Welcome back to RP3 and Company. Hour number two coming to a close. Make sure to vote on our poll question of the day. Giannis wins NBA Finals MVP. He's now a two-time league MVP, Finals MVP, All-Star Game MVP, five-time All-NBA selection, five-time All-Defensive Team selection, former Defensive Player of the Year. He's 26. Also Most Improved Player as well. 26. Dropped 50 points in a clinching game in the NBA Finals last night. The first time that's happened since 1958 when Bob Pettit accomplished the feat. Our poll question of the day, is Giannis the best player in the NBA right now? Is it him? Is it Kevin Durant? Is it someone else? 88% of you say yes, he is the best. 12% say no. Darren on the Twitter says, I'll give it to Durant until he gets bounced out the Olympics without a medal. Then KD can't say he's the best player in the world because he's in a situation where he can prove it right now. Then Giannis can take the crown. It's a good comment. Ton on Twitter says, he's no MJ, but he doesn't need to be. Even if he isn't a great shooter, he still scores a lot of points. That means he can't be a terrible shooter, right? Now it's Zion's turn. By the way, I don't know if you caught this afterwards. He said this to ESPN, Giannis. I could go to a super team and just do my part and win a championship, but this is the hard way to do it, and we did it.
I love that guy.
Oh,
I love him.
How could you not love that guy? Hour number two in the books. Hour number three, we'll kick it off with the Mad Dog, Ron Higgins. That's next right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. SEC Media Days is usually the indicator that we are close to the college football season kicking off. We are about 5 weeks away. Labor Day weekend is right around the corner. SEC Media Days is back in Hoover. You had SWAC Media Days yesterday in Birmingham. We'll have Sunbelt Media Days down in New Orleans. We'll be broadcasting live tomorrow morning, myself and Kevin Foote, back-to-back there from the Hotel Sheraton, as we'll be reporting on Sunbelt Media Days with the Raging Cajuns and more. But let's talk a little LSU, shall we? They took the podium on Monday. Coach O, Austin Deculus, with a magnificent head of hair. And, of course, Derek Stingley Jr. What stood out Anything caught our next guest's attention? Well, we're going to find out because he is the editor-in-chief of Tiger Rag Magazine, award-winning columnist, reporter, and also a man who was very comfortable being up at the podium in front of the cameras on the very first day of SEC Media Days. It's time for us to talk with the Mad Dog. It's time for the Tigers Midweek Report.
What a great Tiger.
Half the week is over, which means it's time for the Tigers Midweek Report with the editor of Tiger Rag, the Mad Dog himself, Ron Higgins.
First question to you, my good friend, is did you unexpectedly steal the show at Media Days on Monday when you were up there at the podium, my friend?
No, we were just messing around, you know. I was trying to get people to call me commissioner, but they didn't call me commissioner, so I walked off and left the building.
Oh, you pulled a Deion. You pulled a Deion
Sanders. I got to tell you, it's the most egotistical, narcissistic, stupid thing I've seen from a guy who hasn't done a damn thing as a head coach. And I've called Nick Saban Nick all my life. The thing is, I worked in Jackson as a sports editor. I know that university needs coverage. And so if you're going to walk out, boy, I wish I was editor in Jackson. I would tell my reporters, you know what? Don't talk to Deion. Don't mention his name in a story. Act like he's invisible. Oh, my God. That's another rant for another day, but I had to say that. It was just it's just like the guy who did that, Nick Suss of the Jackson Clarion Ledger, he worked for me. He's a great reporter, totally professional. And I call all coaches by their first names. They're not gods. They're men. They're mortal men. They're not gods. Call them by their name, Nick. You know,
I've gone both ways. Sometimes I get just comfortable. I'll call coach, right? Or sometimes I'll use their first name. I've never been cussed at. I've never had anyone walk off away from me.
It's just ludicrous. I mean, really. And he, you know, just like grow up, Deion.
Deion loves some Deion, though, Ron. Deion loves my man.
Loves himself some Deion. He loves himself some Deion a whole much.
All right, but let's go back to Monday. What stood out to you, if anything at all, from what Coach O had to say when he took the podium there in Hoover?
Well, he did answer my question whether he interviewed people or not in assistance 2 years ago, and not really. I wanted a clarification on that. That stood out. The fact that he said, you know, he wants to do things his way from now on, I think that's another step in his growth that he probably should have made before last year. But I understand that he was at Ole Miss. He was so paranoid of after he got fired at Ole Miss. One of the mistakes he said he made was micromanaging people. And I think they kind of stuck in his head as he's taking over the LSU job. And he's tried to hire people, let them do their jobs and not question much. But I think he finally understood last year, he's had a lot of years in this business, and he has the right to question stuff in games. And that's what he meant when he said that's what he meant about, you know, we're going to do things, you know, my way or whatever he said. But the inference was, you know, that he's in charge, which he is in charge, and he should have done the stuff last year, but he didn't. That stuck out. His basic line on the quarterbacks. I mean, he's going to play that right down the middle, and I don't blame him. I find it fascinating people online have chosen their quarterback or quarterbacks. Everybody thinks it's going to be this guy. Most people think it's going to be Max Johnson. And there's some people think it's going to be Miles Brennan. It's going to be the guy who gets the ball in the end zone the most in preseason practices and scrimmages. That's who it's going to be. It's always that way. It's been that way since the end of time. I mean, since they were cavemen playing football, you know, who's your quarterback? Oh, he get the ball in the end zone. He get the rock in the end zone. That's pretty simple.
I do love how people have these real, because people ask me, well, who do you think? And I says, I don't know. I lean towards it being Brennan, but It's really going to be who's going to win out on camp. But people are very just drawing a line and saying, it's going to be this, it's going to be this. And I'm like, guys, Brennan started 3 games. Max Johnson started 2.
I mean,
that's Brennan, it. That's it. They've started 5 games. T.J. Finley started the most games last year for LSU. He's not Brennan on the 11, team.
Brennan threw 11 touchdowns in 3 games. It's like he doesn't exist. Is Miles going to transfer? Let me tell you something about Miles Brennan. Miles Brennan, when he lived, on Mississippi Gulf Coast. He lived in a house that one was being remodeled that burned down, and they rebuilt it, and it got blown away by Katrina. He lived on a boat in Destin for a year. Miles Brennan's tough, okay? Miles Brennan doesn't run. So just know that for the people who think that if Miles Brennan doesn't win the job, that Miles Brennan's leaving. Miles Brennan has invested, 5-6 years in this program now.
He could have left multiple times, Ron, and he hasn't. And if he doesn't win the job, he's not going to transfer out. He will be the good soldier because he loves LSU.
And plus the fact, he may get drafted anyway.
That's true.
I mean, just know that for all these people that, is he going to transfer? I'd be stunned. But we're not even there yet. And the fact is that, if you look at the spring scrimmage stats, Miles Brennan had better stats. But you can't judge it on the spring scrimmage. Not like LSU's going to judge it on the whole preseason.
Correct.
And again, it's going to – I mean, like any coach will tell you, who gets the ball to end zone the most when they're on the field? I mean, what quarterback gets them there? That's basically what, who gets them in the right place and who gets them the end zone the most. So we'll see how it plays out. But I think Ed handled that well, as always. He couldn't answer the Title IX question, of course. That's a lawsuit. I thought he was very relaxed, handled himself, great. I thought both players were good. We had them in a private room before they went on there, and they were really, really good, because you can't get much on the podium when they're up there. I think, Stingley shocked some people when he said, this is the first time I've actually interviewed with somebody from the media since my freshman year. And all the people were like, what? It's like, true. You couldn't talk to him. I mean, they never got a chance to talk to him. Even last year, hardly ever.
That's right.
And he was good. I mean, he was good in the private room. He's not a big media guy. He's still a little bit raw at it. But I mean, that's because they haven't let him do it enough. I thought Deklis was really good. I think Deklis was generally really excited to be there. I mean, he was really excited to be there. And then I guess the best question was, would you do an endorsement for a haircut place if they said you had to cut your hair? And of course he said, I'm going to have to ask my girlfriend. My girlfriend likes my hair. But he said his girlfriend cut 3 inches off his hair before he came. But I thought LSU did well. It was a good day and a good thing. And I think Ed likes going on that first day if you can do it. So today's Nick's day. Nick should be up there soon on Wednesday. That's his day. But it was good. I mean, it was a little bit different, less credentials issued, more spacing, I guess. The players, you couldn't talk to them on little side podiums. They had to have the big one, which was fine. But otherwise, it was good because, like you said, it does mark kind of like the unofficial beginning of football season. It's right around the corner. So, yeah, it was good.
We're talking with Ron Higgins, the editor-in-chief of Tiger Rag. He joins us here on RP3 and Company. Ron, let me ask you this. Obviously, it's media day and everything like that. What was it like, though, not having the fans down at the end of the escalator, crowding around, looking for autographs, and having them be outside and not having spray-painted dogs walking around the building from the mall?
Well, to be honest, it was awesome. I mean,
so did you go ahead and pull Commissioner Sankey aside and go, Greg, bud, this whole not having fans inside the building thing, I think that's something we need to keep going moving forward.
I told Herb Vincent that. This is pretty good. I like this. it raises the noise level in that place. I mean, I feel bad for the radio people in Radio Row down there when they have fans in there because it's so loud down there.
Yeah, it's a tad loud.
it's tough for the radio people to even with headphones on to a lot of times hear. So it was okay. I like that because most of the people fans are good. I think are Alabama fans. Just, I mean, for the other days you'll see a scattered amount of fans, but they're not as aggressive and obnoxious and as Mardi Gras like as, you know, Alabama fans.
Any word while you were there? Because we're so focused on the quarterback battle and everything like that. Who's going to win that and everything? And the new coordinators. What about who's going to stand out being able to run the football for this team? Because that is a big question mark for LSU entering the season, right?
Yeah, I think Ty Davis Price is. I think they're going to be pretty good running the ball. Actually, I mean, I think Ty Davis Price is. Has gotten bigger and faster. I think John Emery is. I think they would have run the ball better last year. They had better play calling. Honestly, they didn't get the same play calling they got the year before, and when Joe Brady was involved in it. So I thought that hurt them. I can only remember them run the ball decently one or two games. Those guys were really good backs, and the freshman backs they have come in are excellent. So I guess I'm not that worried about the running backs as most people should be, because I think they have probably four really good ones, maybe five. And people, I know last year it didn't look like that, but last year was just different. I mean, I don't put all the blame on the running backs or the offensive line. I put it basically on the coaches who didn't get the job done, and they're gone. And I also put the blame on Ed Orgeron for hiring those coaches without interviewing them face to face. I mean, it's inexcusable, and Ed knows that, and he said this year he did his homework. He interviewed him face to face thoroughly. I think the thing Ed realized last year was that he needed coaches that could connect and communicate with players, which is why he hired six new coaches and all of them younger. And he made sure the players among themselves had a venue to meet and talk, and you know, a lot of leadership groups. And I mean, from talking to Derek Stingley and Austin Deculus, they inferred that, I mean, this team, it's closer than last year's team, basically because one, they just went through a whole spring training together and whole off season. So naturally they feel closer. They see each other more. They go to dinner more with each other. As Deculus said, he goes, this feels more like our 2019 team as far as relationships and knowing guys. So that's a good thing.
All right, bud, we'll get you out of here with a baseball question. We are continually seeing news come out of the LSU baseball team with the new coach. He's got his staff and some movement continuing with players and the roster management. My question to you is, are we still going to see even more tweaks moving forward? And, you know, I think about a guy like Cade Beloso. Is he going to have a role on this team with all the movement, all the guys coming into the program? Do you expect more movement in and out of the LSU baseball program when it comes to the roster in the next month?
I think you'll see tweaks all the way until it's time to register for school. Honestly, I think that's just the way Jay Johnson is. You know, the last Zoom call, I asked him about, you know, the roster management, and he said, you know, I think you have 40 on in February for the first game. And he said right now it's kind of touch and go, and there'll be constant tweaks. I mean, I think they'll tweak some more. They've basically redone their catching core. They've added some pitchers. Of course, added the All-American infield from Arizona, who's going to be dynamite. It'll be interesting. I hope Jay Johnson knows that there's no grace period at LSU in baseball. There's none. I mean, there's just none. I'm sure he did when he took over the job. It's sad that it's not, but you're paid to win here. And, and for better or for worse, Paul Maneri got a really young, unexperienced team somehow to the Super Regionals last year. And honestly, Jay Johnson probably needs to equal that at least in his first year, because I don't know if there's, like I said, LSU baseball fans are relentless and unforgiving, and they don't cut much slack at all. And to them, as you hire the new coach, you get all these new guys in here, you got an All-American from Arizona. We should be getting, and all our guys are coming back, we should be getting back to, Omaha. Well, we'll see.
Bud, appreciate the insight as always. And I hope you have a tremendous weekend coming up. But what are you going to do? I know that you're going to rest up, recharge batteries. I know camp's going to start, but what are you going to do to kind of relax before then?
Really probably work on this, our preseason football magazine, every waking hour since deadline is next Wednesday.
So no rest is what you're saying.
There's no rest. And, of course, I'm going to demand my staff call me editor or I'm going to walk out. That's just the way it is.
Rod, thank you for your time, brother.
Thank you, Prime. We appreciate it.
It's Ron Higgins, the Mad Dog himself, from Tiger Rag Magazine. We got to take a timeout. More RP3 and Company coming up right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Simulcast on Stadium 32.3 and 133 on LUS. Woo! Me on my crawfish pie. Could go for a crawfish pie later today. Anybody got a good spot I can hit up for lunch? Huh? I got a couple for you, if you were wondering.
Do you actually?
I do.
I would actually like to know. I know one place, but I haven't tried their crawfish pie.
I don't know if they have crawfish pie there, but they have tremendous drinks and great eats. And if you're a member of the 103.7 The Game Clubhouse Rewards Club, guess what? You'll have the opportunity to enter to win a $40 gift certificate to Misfits Dine and Drink. It's down there right next to Lake Triomphe. You go get a round of golf in, bud. Go right next door. Clean up. Be presentable, please. It's a nice establishment, okay? But you can enjoy yourself. $40 gift card to Misfits Dine and Drink. But you can only win that by joining the 103.7 The Game Clubhouse at 103.7thegame.com. It's free to join. You earn points by becoming a member. It's just that easy. And once you do, you'll have the opportunity to score that $40 gift card to Misfits Dine and Drink down in Broussard. Let's talk a little SEC Media Days some more, shall we? We did not get to the Lane Train, and since we have a couple minutes, can we do so?
Please. It's my favorite coach.
can we listen to what our man Lane Kiffin has to say? He always has something to say. So, this is what he had to say about his good friend, Ed Orgeron. Once again, they work together at multiple locations, USC, Tennessee. They're friends. And this is what he had to say about the man who leads the LSU Tigers.
You know, got to work with Coach O as an assistant and really learned from him. You know, he was a recruiting coordinator for Pete Carroll at the beginning. I was 24, 25 years old as the tight end coach. And, you know, got to learn from him and see the great classes that we signed there at USC and how that got going, and he was obviously a big part of that. And then later on, you know, to flip it around and you know, to come with us to Tennessee and then to USC. You know, I love Ed, very passionate, as you guys all know, but awesome person and very close friend, and nobody outworks him, that's for sure.
There's a level of respect there. Look, Lane respects Saban, and they work together, but he doesn't like Saban, right? But there's a level of respect. There's an actual friendship there. Lane worked with Nick Saban. They're colleagues. He may respect Nick, but there's a level of, like, appreciation and love between Lane and Ed that goes back to their days at USC together. You could tell Lane learned about recruiting from Ed. when Ed was – when they worked together there at USC, because that's really Ed's probably his best attribute as a coach is how to recruit and recruit well. And he's done it for years, learned it really probably when he's coaching under Jimmy Johnson in Miami and just carried it over and just got better and better at it. I mean, he didn't win a lot of games at Ole Miss, but they had a ton of talent that Houston Nutt won a bunch of games with after he got he left Ole Miss. And he's learned how to be a head coach since then. So the Lane train having, you know, not surprising, complimentary things to say about Coach Ogeron. But, you know, look, Lane's also about letting his guys kind of be themselves. And he talked about how important that is for him as a coach to let his players just, you know, be themselves.
It's like on the Feinbaum show when he was talking about Twitter and how I do it differently. And I said, well, you know, I'm more like a normal person and I'm more myself instead of, oh, well, you can't be like this. And that's how I think our players are and how we want them to be. We don't want them to be robots. You know, we don't want them to be, you know, so programmed that they have to be this certain way. You know, we want them to learn and grow and be themselves. So I think this helps out.
That's a little bit of a shot at his former boss, by the way. It's very much, obviously they were talking about NIL, right? Be able to be yourselves, having the sponsorship opportunities. He says he doesn't want them to be robots. That's a shot at Saban, because if you go to Alabama, you sound like the head coach. It's like the Patriots. You ever notice how New England players, when you interview them, they sound a lot like Bill Belichick?
Oh, yeah.
And it's almost like they're trained. They're robots like their head coach.
Look what Tom Brady's become since he left.
Right.
On Twitter.
Social media superstar. And kind of funny, to be honest.
He's become more likable.
Saban has his teams. I mean, I remember it like it was yesterday when they beat Notre Dame for the national championship and they talked to one of their star linebackers afterwards and he was angry. And they're like, why are you so angry? We should have shut him out. Like, there's something to that of not – now, Saban's gotten better over the years in the last decade of learning how to kind of enjoy the moment, right? He'll enjoy a win.
Yeah, Saban's admitted that he's had to adapt his coaching style a little.
Correct, because he wants – so, but yeah, that's a not-so-subtle shot by – Look, I don't care if Ole Miss ever is really a threat to win the SEC. If they have some great years like they did under Hugh Freeze and before that Houston Nutt, where they're in big-time bowl games and winning like 9-10 games, that's fine. That's good. I think it's good for the SEC if Ole Miss is good. But having Lane Kiffin is a blessing for the SEC. Lane is a quote machine, and he's always going to be stirring the pot, and he's always going to be poking the bear, and that's good for the league. You need someone in that Steve Spurrier mode to poke Saban, right? You need that guy to be that way because it makes it fun, and you need that guy. Mike Leach, the mad pirate, he says ridiculous things and wants to talk about Bigfoot and UFOs and Vikings, okay? That's entertaining on a different level. You need that guy that's the antagonator, if you will, in the conference, and Lane's fully embracing that, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, this could be a poll question for later in the week that I've thought about, but he would be the coach that, like, well, let's just take away, like, obviously if I were a recruit, I would consider going to LSU, but if I were a recruit and it didn't matter where I would go based on my love for, you know, a team that I grew up rooting for, if it was just based on coaches, I might want to play for Lane Kiffin.
And that undefeated record Saban has against his former assistants, Will Muschamp, Jimbo Fisher, Kirby Smart, and others, and Lane. He's the one coach that I have the most belief in of ending that. Like, I would not be surprised either this season or next season if Ole Miss pulls off a stunner. They've done it before under Hugh Freeze, but Lane knows offense so well. And he knows how Saban orchestrates his team and his defense. If there'd be one former Saban disciple to best him, it's Ole Miss.
Because that's what it takes to beat Saban. You have to do what Hugh Freeze did, which is just be so aggressive offensively and so annoying offensively,
yes,
and so insane offensively that you just get under his skin. And it did.
Absolutely. We got to take a timeout. We'll talk more about SEC Media Days, college football, when Connor O'Gara from Saturday Down South joins us live next. You're listening to RP3 and Company right here on Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game, simulcast on Stadium, 32.3 and 133 on LUS. Ah, 103.7 The Game is going to be there as the Louisiana Raging Cajuns kick off the 2021 football season in downtown New Orleans for Sunbelt Conference Media Day. Tune in this Thursday morning starting at 6 as both RP3 and Company and Footnotes will be broadcasting live from the Hotel Sheraton in the Big Easy. Yours truly, RP3 and the Footer, will be talking about the biggest news and with the biggest names in the Sunbelt Conference. 103.7 Games live from Sunbelt Media Day coverage is presented by Rope, Soap, and Dope, Tibbs Trailers, Brobridge Truck Stop and Casino, and Lafayette Marble and Granite. So make sure to tune in tomorrow morning for that. It's going to be exciting stuff. Right now, we're going to keep that excitement level at a 10. You know what? We're going to take it up to an 11. That's right, with our next guest. He is one of the best college football writer columnists in the country. It's the one and only from Saturday Down South, Connor O'Gara. Connor, good morning to you, brother. How are you, my friend?
I am doing well. We are halfway through SEC Media Days here. It is so good to be back. I feel like there's a little bit of buzz in the air for Saban, especially after what he said yesterday about Bryce Young at the Texas High School Coaches Clinic.
Oh, $1 million.
This is quite the start to the day that we're anticipating here in the first 20 minutes.
All right, bud, so far, first 2 days, who has stood out to you the most? What stood out to you the most there in Hoover?
You know, I thought Kirby Smart was a lot more open and transparent than I've ever seen him in this setting. And I thought a lot of the things that he said about name, image, and likeness and about COVID vaccine and just being a very open and honest guy, I thought it was very telling of kind of where he is in this conference. And we tend to forget that there are only two coaches in the SEC who have been here longer than Kirby Smart, which is an absurd thing to think about. But that's where we're at. Kirby looks like a guy who's really comfortable in his own skin, and he looks like a guy who's comfortable with the team that he's got. And I think maybe that's also part of why he came off as a really confident guy. And I was impressed with him. And then, you know, seeing Jordan Davis, who Kirby said, if you ever get a chance to interview him, you won't find a better player to be able to interview. And he was, in my opinion, right on the money. I thought Jordan Davis, one of the largest human beings I've ever seen at like 6'6", 350 pounds, whatever he is, but just such an infectious person, so selfless, and a guy that I think a lot of people in college football should know this year coming into the season deserves that All-America consideration. I thought he really stood out. And just hearing some of the stuff about the COVID vaccine and those numbers has been, I think a lot of people have been kind of taken aback by just how serious Greg Sankey was about that and how much he really prioritized speaking about that and the sense of urgency that's needed throughout college football.
Yeah, let's go back to what Sankey had to say, because I also, watching it from afar, Connor, I wanted to get your input here as someone who was there. You know, he did not mince words when it came to the NCAA. He did so in a professional manner. Obviously, you could argue Sankey's probably the most powerful person in college football. What'd you make of what the commissioner had to say on all the topics that he tackled, including about COVID and about, hey, you know what, we don't have time for you to reschedule games if you don't have your vaccinations?
Yeah, well, I was talking to Peter Burns probably about an hour before Sankey went on, and I said, what's going to be the thing that stands out? What's going to be the thing that you're kind of expecting to hear become a theme this week? And he said that Sankey was going to go pretty directly talking about the COVID vaccine. And he was going to make sure it was known and prioritized with what he had to say. And it wasn't going to be something that he had to be asked about. And sure enough, that's exactly what happened. And hearing him talk about the fact that only 6 of 14 SEC teams have reached that 80% threshold and how that there's no room in the schedule left to be able to adjust for some of these games. And last year that was there. This year it's not. And he wants to get rid of those minimum roster requirements, and he wants to put it on the teams to say, be healthy, play football. And if you don't, you're not going to have that competitive advantage. And I think using that sort of tactic to be able to kind of say to the college football world that we're not out of the woods just yet, I think it was a smart move by Sankey. And I think that we've come to expect Sankey to be the voice of reason when it comes to all things handling COVID. Certainly Kevin Warren hasn't been that. And I think that you look around the country and, you know, you would tend to say that Sankey doesn't really mince words. And I thought that he handled himself in a really, really positive way for the good of college football. And he said, look, this isn't political. This is simply about being able to have a normal season and not have flashbacks to 2020.
We're talking with Connor O'Gara of Saturday Down South. He joins us here on RP3 and Company live from SEC Media Days. All right, bud, obviously Kirby was impressive. I agree with you, very transparent. I liked what I heard from Sankey. You know, he didn't mince words. What'd you make of what you heard from Coach O and company when LSU took the podium on Monday?
You knew that somebody was going to ask about the Title IX lawsuit that he is involved in, and Pete Thamel of Yahoo Sports asked that question. I thought he actually asked the question in a pretty ideal way to say, look, I know you can't speak specifically about the lawsuit, which is ongoing, but how do you feel just about the issue as a whole and seeing LSU connected to some of these things? What have been kind of your takeaways? Just kind of have you grown from this or kind of changed some of your perspective? And Ed Orgeron didn't want to go into any of that. And he ended it by saying, you know, I'm standing by my statement. I can't comment on that. Thanks for asking, though. I didn't really like him saying thanks for asking, though. It kind of came off as like, how dare you ask that question? And I didn't think that was necessary at that point. But, you know, that is what it is, and that's a very minor footnote. But, you know, I definitely wouldn't say that he won the day because of that. I think that you saw him talk about the hirings that he had and how even if he had interviewed Bo Pelini in person, he still would have hired him, and talking about taking control of the program again and how he didn't have control the way that he wanted to last year. And that's a tough thing to hear, and I know that he said that before, but when you're the second or third highest paid coach in college football, you're coming off a national championship season, you should probably have control of your program. And clearly he did not last year, and I think that, you know, he's been honest and pretty open about that and his struggles to be able to kind of keep that pace up. But, you know, I didn't necessarily think he had the best day, but he was never going to have the best day.
What did you – you know, my other question to you when it comes to that, Connor, on that first day, rather, is Dan Mullen. A lot of people ran with his quote about the, you know, permanent other division opponent. It was a little bit more nuanced by that. What do you make of what Mullen did say about, you know, being forced to play a permanent opponent, that he'd like to get rid of it?
I'm not an SEC purist in the same way that some are, so I didn't really have as much of a problem with it. I agree with him that it is kind of messed up, and the context of that question was he was asked about Florida hosting Alabama for the first time in 10 years. I mean, first time in 10 years. I know that game we've seen a ton because it's been the SEC championship so often, but that shouldn't happen. And there are some weird SEC scheduling quirks that have happened as a result of the expansion of the conference and to now have that annual crossover game there where, yeah, I mean, it looks a little bit weaker on Mullen's part to say that because everybody knows that his crossover is with LSU. And that's what changes these things. But, you know, I think that we're at a place now where we can look at this and say, who's benefiting the most from this? Is there a change that needs to be made? I don't know. I think this is just an interesting thing to kind of throw out there and say, maybe we should at least look at this. And he didn't want to throw Sankey under the bus by saying it, but certain teams do have a competitive advantage. And if you're, you know, Kentucky and you get to play Mississippi State every year, it's just different. If you're Mizzou and you get to play Arkansas every year, it's different. And I think that getting to see more of these games more often, I think in Mullen, that's the way that he spun it, was that it'd be more exciting for the fans. And on that point, I agree with him.
Talking with Connor O'Gara, Saturday Down South. All right, bud. Tuesday, you had another new coach. We had Shane Beamer on Monday, but then we also had Josh Heupel on Tuesday. What do you make of what Josh Heupel had to say concerning him taking over the Volunteers program?
It's all about selling offense. All about selling offense. If Tennessee does nothing this year but communicate to the world that we're going to score points and it's going to be fun, I'll be surprised. That is what they will do. no doubt about it. And I'm not necessarily a believer that they're going to have some top 10 offense in college football like Josh Heupel did each of the last 3 years at UCF. But think about being in his position right now. If you're going to change the identity of Tennessee, that's what you truly have to do in year one, because I don't think they're going to be able to stop anybody on defense. I don't think that's going to happen. I think they're going to be the worst defense in the SEC. But from an offensive standpoint, I think you need to sell to Arch Manning, to Ty Simpson, hey, we throw the ball, we stretch the field, we have receivers who want to come play here. This is different than what you saw throughout the Jeremy Pruitt era, even different than what you saw throughout the Butch Jones era. Can Josh Heupel establish that identity? I think it's possible, but I think it's going to be an uphill climb to be able to do that, at least in year one. I don't necessarily know that they have quite the personnel to be able to execute that, but he's selling offense. There's no doubt about it, and it's very reflective of the brand that he has built for himself.
Lane Train took the podium yesterday, bud. He's always entertaining. I've long said the SEC needs this guy. They need the guy that's going to poke the bear like we had for so many years with Steve Spurrier. What stood out for you from what you heard from Mr. Kiffin yesterday?
Well, we've lacked comic relief in the SEC for a while. You know,
yes, we have.
Since Spurrier and Miles left the conference, we've really not had that guy to kind of loosen things up a little bit. And Lane is definitely that guy. I thought it was kind of funny to hear him react to the Bryce Young seven-figure endorsement and all that stuff. Sorry, that was Jordan Rogers coming on for a brief moment there. We got to see Lane kind of be in his element, and I thought he was comfortable. I thought he looked great too, by the way. And I got in a little bit of trouble with Lane because I may or may not have, but definitely did ask about his diet, which he's tweeted about. And he said in a tweet, I had to stop indulging in so much Mississippi food. And I asked him about that. I said, you know, besides not indulging in as much Mississippi food, what have you kind of done to be able to diet? He said that was a strange question to ask a guy. And you know what? Maybe it was to a certain extent, but Lane wasn't having anything of it. He took it as I was putting down Mississippi food, which I would never do to the great people of Mississippi. And they have fine food. I have tasted plenty of it, but you know, Lane felt good. He looked good. And I think that the college football world is ready for this version of Lane Kiffin.
All right, bud, quickly, we get you out of here with this, man. I only got about a minute, but who are you looking forward to today besides Saban?
I'm looking forward to Jimbo. Jimbo just delivered A&M's best finish in the AP top 25 in 81 years. How is Jimbo Fisher going to look after three consecutive years of being told, you're wasting this opportunity. You've got all the resources in the world, and you haven't taken advantage of this like you should. He finally did that last year. And I know that when you pay a coach that much money, the expectation is the playoff. But how is Jimbo going to come across? Is he going to have any sort of response after what Saban said yesterday about the Bryce Young stuff? Is he going to try and come over at the top and say, oh, Haynes King is doing this, this, and this? I don't know. But I'm looking forward to Jimbo, and I think it gets kind of lost in the shuffle with all the headliners of Kiffin and Leach and Saban this week. But I think that we're going to be in for a very confident version of Jimbo Fisher in 2021.
Connor, appreciate your time as always, brother. Enjoy the rest of your week. Try to stay out of trouble there in Hoover, bud, and we'll talk to you soon.
Absolutely. Appreciate it, man.
That's Connor O'Gara of Saturday Down South. We got to take a timeout. We'll wrap up today's edition of RP3 and Company, get you set up for Footnotes with Kevin Foote. That's all coming up next right here on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. Final results of the poll question of the day. After last night's NBA Finals win for Giannis, who's now a two-time league MVP, a Defensive Player of the Year, five-time All-Defensive Team honoree, five-time All-NBA honoree, and now an NBA Finals MVP after a 50-point performance, the most points scored in a closeout game in NBA Finals history, tying the mark set by Bob Pettit back in 1958. Is Giannis now the best player in the NBA? Final results, 82% of you say yes, 18% say no. I think you can make the argument for him or for Kevin Durant and a few others. But here's the thing. Giannis is 26 years old. And this is a guy who was a little too skinny, developed. He earned the Most Improved Player Award by the NBA, and he's turned himself into a guy that was more than a dozen players drafted before him in his draft class. Once again, small market guy, undersized guy, proved himself, developed, worked on his game, and look at him now, 26 years old, and is in the conversation of being the best basketball player on the face of the planet.
And he's only been playing basketball for just a decade. 17, 16 years old.
Just, man, if he keeps improving, watch out. I want to thank all of our guests today. Connor O'Gara from Saturday Down South, the Mad Dog Ron Higgins from Tiger Rag, and shout out to our guy Jarrett Rozier, who was sleeping off because he was celebrating in Milwaukee the Bucks' victory. So shout out to him for that. We'll be in New Orleans tomorrow, broadcasting live from the Hotel Sheraton for Sunbelt Media Days. But until then, y'all be safe out there. Be kind to one another. Kevin Foote and Footnotes is next right here on Acadiana Sports Station 103.7 The Game.